So it's that simple. Just your owner's manual. So give us a call if you'd like, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have five lines open, and Gil answers the phone. He'll ask you what your name is, and then he'll whisper in my ear that we've got Mary on line one, and I'll go to Mary, and we go from there. So it's kind of high-tech in that respect. I get a lot of technical magazines, and one of the magazines that caught my eye here recently was Routine Maintenance in 2021. Are your routine service processes the same as they've always been? Maybe it's time to change that. I'm thinking to myself, in the old days, when I first started at a gas station when I was in high school in 1968, we did oil changes every 3,000 miles. And, of course, then everything was off an oil change interval, so we rotated the tires every other oil change. And then we typically did all the fluids at about 30, 60, and 90,000 miles. And that's kind of, and then brakes was kind of a wear issue, and fan belts, we usually replaced those when we did something that was related to the front of the motor. For instance, if you had a water pump fail at 60,000 miles, well, the water pump's driven by one of the belts, and most of them have to come off anyway. So to replace the belts with new ones, there's no additional labor costs because they all had to come off anyway to get to the water pump that's buried in the middle of the maze of fan belts. So those were the kinds of things, and those were the kinds of attitudes that certainly more than half of the gas station owners and the shop owners back then carried forth. They thought, what's in the customer's best interest? Now, obviously your success, your income stream, and how nice a truck and boat you have and all that other kind of stuff has to do with sales. But like most businesses, the auto repair industry works off about a 10% or less net profit, so they get to keep 10 cents of every dollar. However, then Uncle Sam's going to take between 25 and 33% of that. So at the end of the day, you're sitting there at 7%, 7 cents out of every dollar. That's typically what I have seen over the last years as I exchange information about my shop with other shop owners, and they have a group called a 20 group where you get a bunch of shop owners together and everybody shares the information. And everyone's information is inputted into the same spreadsheet so we can figure out how many each square foot of your shop generates how much in income. Not income, I'm sorry, in sales. Everything's based off of sales. So those were the fun days, and I've been around since the 20 groups and even after that. And even to this day, it's not uncommon for my shop to compare books with other shops, friends of mine, perhaps not people that live next door to me, but and share that information. He's getting so much, his cost associated with maintenance of the building is so much less than ours. What are we doing differently? Oh, we're washing the windows every week. He's having the windows washed every month. Oh, that might be one of the many things. Those kinds of things. So I've been a master technician since 1991. I've been ASE certified since 1986. And today I'm an ASE master certified technician with an L1 rating. And the master means I've passed all the tests. There's eight of them. And then an L1 is an advanced drivability and performance rating. And that's the one is the diagnosis. So we can talk about any of that that you want, especially the diagnosis, because from the diagnosis point of view, you can take the same car to five different shops and you're going to probably get five different answers. But I think I can convince you that they're all rooted in the same fundamental process. Well, let me say this. Four of the five are rooted in the same fundamental process. There are shops that I have been around that have a very high number with respect to diagnosis. And they justify it saying this. They say, no one knows how long it's going to take because we haven't till we find out what it is. I agree with that sentence. I agree with that sentence. No one can tell you how long it's going to take to track this down. It can be 5 minutes or it can be 5 hours. It could be either one of those. That's a difficult thing. So when you call up and say, I have a check engine code, what's your diagnostic? There's a lot of answers you're going to get. I think the overwhelming majority of the shops that have been around a long time have just kind of a balance. So if we give it to a seasoned technician and he finds it in 3/4 of an hour, then typically everybody's billing 3/4 of an hour. Everybody that I know. there are other people that are going to take that up to an hour or whatever. And, of course, the 0.9 of an hour, the 0.5 of an hour is a derivative of your labor rate. So if your labor rate happens to be $100 an hour, that's easy to figure that out. 20, 40, 60, 80, and 100. So that's easy. However, it's different when it's $135.39 per hour. And that makes it a little more difficult to figure out. But it is a tough thing. And I guess the question is that there appears to be a movement, which, by the way, I agree with, that we give you a range. And the range is it will not cost you less than $75 to identify the problem related to the code and to give you an estimate for the repair. So the repair is actually three things: to find it, the part cost, and to replace the part. And then the free test on the back end is just make sure that what we saw at the front is now gone in the back. That's something that typically isn't charged, but it's part of the diagnostic process. It's the follow-up. So those are the kind of things that are really tough. And on top of all of that, everyone understands in the auto repair industry that the cars of today are completely different than the cars of yesterday. Yesterday, again, we changed oil every 3,000 miles. We did fluids at 30, 60, 90. We did most everything at like 50 to 75,000 miles. We did the belts and the hoses. And typically on brakes, you went 25 on the front, 35 on the back, 25,000 miles and 35,000 miles on the back. Today we have cars that come in that have 60,000 miles and the brakes look like they're brand new. It just depends on who's driving, how fast they're driving, how late they are from work, and all of those other dynamics. There's lots of people that will downshift their automatic transmissions to save the brakes. Some techs will say, well, wait a minute, you're sacrificing wear and tear on a piece of a part on your car, your transmission, that could easily cost you $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 to replace. Brakes are cheaper. There is good and bad about that discussion, but if you want to have that discussion, have it with the guy that takes care of your car. And by looking at the odometer, how old the car is, looking at some of the repair orders, they should be able to guide you with that kind of stuff. It's not a question we get a lot, but it's an example of one of them that you could get your shop involved. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us if you'd like, if you have a car question. There is there's lots of these magazines that come out to us, and one of them was about an elevated misfire, and this article is written by a guy that I actually respect, and he's very knowledgeable, and he walks the middle of the road where he's not pro-technician and he's not pro-customer. He's just kind of what's right, and I agree with him probably 98-99% of the time, if not 100. But he talks about that he has to go to a vehicle that's been modified, and it has a misfire code. Now, a misfire code at the local auto parts store is going to bring you a set of spark plugs, a set of wires. They're going to give you all kinds of stuff to put on your car, and it's what I call a shotgun approach, and they're going to hit it probably 25 to 35% of the time. They're going to be right with spark plugs or spark plug wires, stuff like that. But it's not uncommon for us to have to plug in a vacuum line to fix a misfire code. It's not uncommon for us to have lots of other problems that are of much larger magnitude than a spark plug or a wire. So when you go to the auto parts store and you have the young man or woman take the code and then give you a list of things that it could be and then say, this is the predominant one, this is what you should do, I would suggest that they don't know what the predominant one is. Maybe predominant one of the geographical area they serve. But in reality, a misfire on number 5 cylinder can be just so many different things. And replacing the spark plug and the wire, you can do that if that's what you want to do. But that's chances of it being a spark plug or a wire are pretty slim. Most of the time, it's delivery of fuel or contaminated air or a compression problem. But in this particular case, he sent out to look at a misfire code on a very large, lifted, off-road kind of truck. And the discussion centers around a couple of things. Do we charge extra for those big trucks? And I think the answer, the consensus of the men I respect and women in the auto repair industry that I respect is yes, because we have to work in the engine compartment, which means we have to build scaffolding in order to get into the engine compartment. And so there's an extra a labor associated with crawling in and out, as opposed to just walking up and bending over the hood to get into the engine compartment. In this particular case, it was a misfire, and I was really excited because this is a mobile technician.
1 minute.
And he talks about how he got there, and he recognized the code was a misfire, and he recognized it was number six cylinder. So he ran a compression test on number six cylinder, and the compression test showed that there was a problem with compression. It was quite different than the cylinders on either side of number six. So number four and number five cylinders he also checked, and he said, okay, six has got a problem when compared to four, and or five's got a problem compared to four and six. That's a great thing to do. So now he's isolated it to that. So now he has to run a series of tests to see if it's too much air, too much fuel, and what he comes up with is that he has a problem with this because it doesn't have fuel. So he thinks about the injector, and so he switches to injectors, and the problem's still there. At the end of the day, he properly identifies it as a lifter problem and a camshaft problem, which is deep within the middle of the motor, which necessitates taking the top of the engine apart to replace the camshaft and the bad lifter. It was a great diagnosis. I thought his charge of $175 was very fair. I thought the charge to fix the problem of $4,500 was right in the middle of the road, because the whole front of the motor has to come apart and the whole top of the motor has to come apart to replace the camshaft and the lifters. So I thought all of that was in really good, really fair and equitable. The only thing I found unusual was the discussion about, do we charge more for trucks that are lifted up in the air because it's harder to get up into the engine compartment. And I thought, I'm not quite sure that's something I want to participate in. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. It's wide open. We'll be back. Today is the 17th of July, and you're more than welcome to join us. It's a live show, 602-508-0960. Steve's on the line, and we're going to take him first. Steve, how can I help you?
You had a quick question about air conditioners in a car.
Okay.
Right now, with it being so humid, would it be easier just to keep it on max so it would be recirculating the interior air rather than have it on regular where it brings in the outside air and has to take all the condensation out of the air?
That's a great question. That's a great question. It's the first time anyone's ever asked me that question. Let's go back to the fundamentals. Recirculatory is like your air conditioning in your house. We're recirculating the air. It gradually gets colder by the minute as it circles and circles and circles. So you're going to get colder. Then what happens is people roll down the window or shut the fan down, and then we freeze the unit up because it's already ice cold. What you're saying is I'm going to take the inside air, take the moisture out of it, and not have to deal with the moisture in the high humidity times that I would if I went to normal, and you're absolutely right. But I also would suggest to you that the moisture isn't a bad thing. What we don't want to do is we don't want to dry up the evaporator case and not have any moisture, because then the drain frosts, or doesn't freeze over, but the drain gets plugged up with a bunch of trash, and then it doesn't drain, and now you have a whole different problem to go after. So I think what I would do is I tell people if they're going to do recirculatory, they have to use the top two speeds. If you get in the bottom two speeds, then you start freezing the unit up, and we're cycling the compressor on and off, and that isn't really good for it in the long run. So to answer your question,
right,
it really doesn't make any difference either way, but I'm proud to tell you that you're one of the few people that really understands the difference between normal and maximum recirculation, and there's a real benefit to using those appropriately. For instance, when you get into your truck after work, well, how do you turn on the air, and what do you do to cool the cab?
I usually just put it on max and maybe crack the window a little bit just to let some of the hot air out.
Okay.
And then once it starts cooling down, drop the fan speed down at least maybe one.
Okay, and the only thing I would change is I'd go to normal first, because we got outside air, and we're going to push the hot air to the top of the cab and out the windows.
Okay.
Then after...
And another thing.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And then another thing, if you're rolling around with the max on all the time, like you're saying, as far as freezing over, maybe just every once in a while flip it over back to regular and let it run for a minute or so, then put it back on max to keep everything maybe... going, or
you can You can. For me, it's just really a matter of I'm not flipping really back and forth. I get in and I go to normal. I open up the windows, blow it out. Then I go to recirculatory, and I never drop below 3. And if it gets too cold, I'm worried about freezing it up. The freezing it up doesn't hurt it. It just causes the compressor to cycle on and off. It's just the cycling that is going to add wear to the compressor. So in my particular case, I run max pretty much all the time.
And then also it's better if it's too cold, just use the temperature control gauge and maybe put that a little from all the way cold, but you still get the cool temperature with the high fan speed.
You're right.
Or at least not on full, because then it goes to the maximum pull on the motor.
Okay, now to do this, and you're right, I'm going to take what you said and put it into a visual for radio people that don't have the benefit of TV. It's a Y, okay? We just look at the capital Y. And on the left side is outside air, and on the right side of the Y is recirculatory, and the stalk of the Y is what comes out the vents. And so what we're doing is we're manipulating what's coming in and what's going out, and we're using it to our best ability. One of the things that people would really like to know, and you'll agree with this, Steve, is maybe I pick up a friend of mine who's a smoker sitting in the passenger seat. I'm going to drop his window down just a little bit. I'm going to go to fan speed high and go to normal so that I'm going to kind of blow against him and out of the truck. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sounds good. I think we got everyone pretty much confused, but we understand what's going on.
Hey, and
appreciate your help.
Okay, you bet. The bottom line is the difference between maximum and normal is the difference between swamp cooler and air conditioning. That's the difference. With swamp cooler, when you turn on swamp cooler, you had to open up windows in order to get airflow through your house. With air conditioning, you didn't have the windows open. Well, normal is the old swamp cooler, although it's still cold air. It's still the old swamp cooler. You have to have the windows open. And with maximum, you don't have to have the windows open. So it's kind of something like that. If you want to look at the best repair shops list that I've ever made, then you can go to my website, marksalem.com. There's a list of shops that I can send you to that I have the utmost confidence in their ability to diagnose your problem, stay within the estimate, fix your problem, and do it fairly and honestly and with ethics. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is one of those shops. He's a diesel guy, and I've known Nate for years, and I've always admired his skill with Dodge, Chevy, Ford, and a variety of other diesel-run vehicles. So if you're anywhere near the area of Pinnacle Peak Road and North Phoenix, on the I-17 in North Phoenix, that's where Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is open Monday through Friday. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website, and they really do good work. But Nate is one of those guys that just has focused on the Chevy, the Ford, and the Dodge, and he's really, really, really very good at what he does. So if you just can't find a good diesel shop, I would like very much to suggest Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. There's other shops on the list, and I'll give you another example of another shop that's kind of in a completely different area of work, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil's been around since 1968. He started when automatic transmissions first came out, within the decade when they first came out. Today, they're quite different, but Phil understands the fundamentals. Phil understands that we shift the transmission based on speed of the vehicle, RPM of the engine, and now with computers, engine vacuum and where your foot's at and a variety of other different things. But Phil understands that. He understands that we have to shift your transmission in a variety of ways. So he knows that. He's been there.
2 minutes.
He has the experience that few others have because he was back there when automatic transmissions first came out. So he's been on 40th Street in Washington since, I bet it was a dirt road when he started there. But Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around since 1968. And every transmission is put on a state-of-the-art dynamometer and tested and shifted before it's put back in the car. That's kind of cool because at least we can find leaks and we can fix them right then and there. And if we have a problem, we'll find it as we exercise the transmission through all the different range: park, reverse, neutral, drive 1, 2, 3, 4, overdrive, lockup, all that stuff. So that's kind of what's important. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, if you have a problem, I'm certain ill. On Monday mornings and Friday afternoons, for obvious reasons, it's difficult. But any other time, if you call ahead and say, can I take someone for a ride, I can duplicate the problem every time. And I'd like to show them the problem. Those are words that we all embrace. We love it when people say something like that. They're considered not Monday mornings and Friday afternoons, for obvious reasons, because we're real busy then. And second of all, they can duplicate the problem, and they've practiced where they can duplicate it every time. Gosh, that's important. But that goes for clunks and bumps and noises when I turn left and all that kind of stuff. You can save yourself a lot of money and insist the shop send someone with you, and you're going to show them how to make the noise, make the clunk, make the rubbing, whatever. And then you're going to switch places with the technician and have and teach him how to make it happen while he drives it. That you can't imagine how much money you can save on the diagnostic side if you can make the shop or ask the shop to do that kind of a process. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. And when you call, Gil's going to answer the phone. He'll be real nice to you. You be real nice to him, and he'll tell you what's your name. And then he'll say in my ear, the next caller is John. So it's 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I've got three lines open. I've got Harold and Bobby, and I'm going to get to them in just a minute. But you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been in Mesa since 1970. But in reality, I've known the families of these two young people that own Thompson's Auto Repair since the 60s. It's an amazing transition where you see mom and dad go into the gas station car repair business, and then ultimately you see their kids go into it as well. That's kind of nifty. And it doesn't happen as often as it really should. But nevertheless, that's why I can refer you to the only shop in Mesa that I can put my name behind and say you're going to get treated fairly, they're going to do a good job, they're going to be right on their price, and they're going to fix your problem without guessing. So Thompson's Auto Repair is on Main Street just east of Stapley. And again, the only shop, and you can find information about them at marksalem.com. Harold, thank you for calling. How can I help you?
Yeah, hey, Mark, I've got a general question for you relative to engine design. It seems as though virtually every manufacturer today offers a turbocharged engine for their cars and their trucks, but nobody that I know of offers a supercharger on an engine. Why is this?
Okay, do you know the difference between the two?
Well, I believe a supercharger is driven by the engine, like belt-driven, and it's basically an air pump.
That's right. And the turbocharger is driven by the exhaust.
Yes, through a turbine wheel.
Right. And so just for the rest of the folks that aren't up to what we're talking about, when your engine breathes, it breathes just like I breathe every day. You suck in and you exhale. You suck in and you exhale. Now, pretend like that I put a little bitty hose in the corner of your mouth, and every time you sucked air in, I gave you a little of additional air. Not enough to blow your lungs up, but just a little additional air. Then we squirt fuel in there, and then we have an explosion. Well, a turbocharger and a supercharger adds power to something that's much smaller than you would expect to give you power. So to answer your question, you're not going to see a lot of superchargers, that's for sure. We had some of those in the Buicks in the early, I think, late 80s, early 90s. They were around for a while, but people didn't want to pay. Plus, when they failed, it was a big deal. And so turbochargers, and virtually every diesel has a turbocharger, and I just think that the belt-driven supercharger compounds the top of the engine, and that means we have to move the supercharger to do any work to the top of the motor, and that's a big deal, where a turbocharger is typically in the exhaust. So I also think the turbocharger is more effective for this reason. It's run by a stream of exhaust that's already present, where the supercharger is going to have a parasitic load on the engine because it's belt-driven. So we're using the exit of the motor to drive the turbocharger, and there's a big difference about that parasitic draw on the overall performance. Did I get it kind of close for you?
Yeah, so I guess what you're saying, don't expect to see anybody offering a supercharger in the near future.
I would think that would be a reasonable guess for, and a reasonable thing for me to say is we just don't see them now. If you're going to take your Camaro, that's a 10-year-old Camaro, or any Mustang and you want to put something that's going to make it go faster, then a supercharger is going to be the easiest dog to do it with. You're just going to bolt it to the top. You're going to have a different pulley and you're going to have a new programmer and you're going to reprogram the car and boom, you're done. So I think aftermarket modifications lead towards superchargers because they're much easier to install.
2 minutes.
And when you start doing a bunch of exhaust work and rerouting exhaust so that you can run the turbo, and then you've got to have a cold air, you've got to have air coming through a cooler, then going to the turbo, and then from there going into the engine, it's just a big deal that you don't have to mess with. So the answer to your question is I don't think you're going to see anybody putting superchargers on anything in the near future. I don't expect that will happen. I don't see the benefit myself. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Bobby, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, I had a question about putting pads in my Brembo brakes in my Mustang.
Uh-huh.
I got actual Brembo pads, and they come with these stainless shims. And my question is, sometimes they come with instructions, but this one didn't. Do you grease both sides of that shim?
Oh,
sometimes they tell you grease the back side of the shim.
Yeah.
And at the ends of the caliper pistons also. But.
Okay. You, in your Mustang, you've got pins that hold a caliper over the rotor, yes?
Yes.
Okay, you'll use a little bit of that grease on those pins. We want that caliper to slide less than right. Then after you put the shim on the pad, on the outside of the pad where the fingers and the piston touch the pad is where that grease should go. Because the vibration of the pad is going to make a noise against the piston on the inboard pad and the fingers of the caliper on the outboard pad. So just a light, thin film will do it. Now, if you ask me now, you say, Mark, do you guys do that at your shop? And the answer is no, and here's why. Because if you put the pads in right and they fit in the caliper right, then they're not going to move. And if they don't move, and there's some anti-rattle springs that typically come with the pads that most people throw away anyway, but if they put those anti-rattle springs in there, then you wouldn't have brake squealing. But the brake squealing is the application of the brakes, and the pad is chattering like a guitar string, and it's making a squealing noise. So, but to answer your question, it's not between the back of the pad and the shim. It's on the other side of the shim and the piston, and on the outboard pad between the fingers. That's where you put that loop, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bobby. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have five lines, and they're all wide open right now. And if you don't start calling with your car questions, then I'm going to start crying. And you don't want to hear that because it's just a bunch of wailing going on over here. But we answer kind of any kind of questions. And those of you ladies, don't be afraid. We'll walk you through. I will walk you through helping you formulate your question. I'll ask, this is kind of a Q&A, is tell me what you got, and then I ask questions and tell me what you got, and the answers is yes, no, or I don't know. Those are acceptable. The guys do it too. It doesn't make any difference. It's easy. So if you have especially a dispute in the family about whether we should use this or do that or not do this, then that's what I'm good for too. 602-508-0960. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to be here till 12 noon talking about cars and car repair. You're welcome to join us. The phone number, easy, 602-508-0960. 960 because this is 960 The Patriot on the AM dial in Phoenix. And you can also find it in a variety of other radio venues on the Internet. So 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Auto Repair has been around since 1967. When you walk in the front doors, you're going to meet Ellen. That's Bob's wife. And don't fool yourself in believing that she doesn't have the authority to make any decision in the world, because she does. But she's a very pleasant lady, and she's also very, very car savvy. So I asked her not too long ago what it was like when she had some big hairy-chested guy come in and start talking down to her about cars. And she smiled, and she says, that's okay, it happens all the time. And I would imagine it does, but that's okay. Bob is really good, Jeremy in the shop is really good, and they're a really good shop to go to. And his strong point is finding stuff that nobody else can find or others have tried but were unable to find. So, again, they've been around since 1967. Auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, check engine lights, noises, hums, clunks, all that stuff. They have the equipment necessary to find it. And then if you accept their estimate, they'll repair it as well. Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and I'm real proud to recommend them to you. Steve, good morning.
Hi, Mark. I got a question for you. Okay, I have an old 77 Plymouth Trail Duster. It's got a 440, and I rebuilt the thermo quad, and I've been tuning it. And my question's about how lean is too lean of a fuel mixture on light throttle? When I just lightly cruise around the neighborhood, it goes to like 16 to 1 on the air fuel ratio, and I just want to know, you know, how lean is dangerous?
North of 19 or north of 20. But see, here's the deal: lean is okay. Obviously, you have some computer operating in the fuel delivery or the ignition on this truck or car.
I just add an air fuel ratio meter.
Okay, all right. Because see, when you're just cruising down the road and you're light throttling and you're just maintaining speed, then under the best of conditions, everything, the EGR valve, the timing, the vacuum advance, the mechanical advance, all that mechanical stuff that you have is going to be working to just try to trim everything. So I wouldn't be concerned about anything other than sustained period of time at 18 or 20 to 1. Now, okay. Also know that when the leaner it runs, for the longer it runs, it raises the temperatures. Another way you could look at this is just look at the temperature gauge. I think on your old Chrysler, you have a middle mark, and then you have a quarter mark, a middle mark, and a three-quarter, and then you got a red zone on the right. Am I close?
Close. I'm not in that car at the moment. I'm at work, so I can't look at it.
No, it's okay. I think today, back in the days, everybody said they were overheating when the needle hit the middle. We now know that the car is best served by running between half and the three-quarter mark. That applies for older cars, too. We now know that. The reason we know that is because the hotter we can run the motor, over two water boils at 220, and so 212, I think it is. I don't know. 212. So we want to run it up a little hotter than that so that when we're exercising the motor, we're going to get the oil over 212. It's going to turn the water to a vapor, and the PCV valve is going to suck it out and send it down the tailpipe. So we're going to forward progress those older cars to, under the best of conditions, between half and three quarters in normal operating temperatures with and without AC. But in your case, if you're doing the trim, let me ask you this: what is it at idle?
Idle, I believe I have it set around 14 to 1, 13 to 14 to 1 at the moment.
That's perfect. That's perfect. 14.7 to 1. That's perfect. So you have got the thermal quad. Now, what about when it's choke and it's on fast idle and the choke flap's half shut? Where are you at there?
Oh, then I think it goes down to 10 to 1.
Or even less. It's okay, though. It's okay. Because there's an explanation why it's at 6 to 1 or 7 to 1 or 10 to 1. And there's an explanation why it's at 20 to 1. As long as there's an explanation for that wide open scale, and most people don't even know what we're talking about, but it's impressive that you put that on there, because you, with that, you can probably do some idle modifications with the air fuel mixture screws to trim that perfectly.
Yeah, sure.
But let me just tell you how to do it without that gauge. You warm it up till the choke flap is wide open. You back out one of the air fuel mixture screws a turn, and you listen to the motor, and your eyes are closed, and the motor didn't change. And so I'm going to back it out again, a turn, and the motor didn't change. Okay, well, I'm that fat. I haven't added any more fuel. So now I'm going to go one in, nothing's changed. One in, nothing's changed. Half in, nothing's changed. A half more, yes. Well, that's the sweet spot. Right there at that last half in on an air fuel mixture screw, we lost some RPM. That's where we need to be. So I'm going to back it out a quarter turn and be done. So you could do that with your idle circuit. On your main circuits, you're going to have to change needles or jets, and you probably don't want to do that.
Yeah, well, I've got a tuning kit, strip kit for it. So I've been going back and forth between idle and metering rod adjustments, trying to get that middle zone and light throttle just a little richer, you know, closer to 14, away from the 16 to 1. And I just... I'm more concerned about just how much do I have to bother doing that.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I wouldn't be worrying about 14 and 16 to 1. Here's the deal. if you get down in the lean condition, it's going to ping. Have you ever got it to ping, like on wide open throttle when you're racing the VW Bug next to you or something?
It's hard to say. That thing's so noisy that it's
okay.
It's hard to tell.
Okay, fair enough. I understand. So the pinging, the pre-ignition is going to be, okay, we need to either bring the timing back or we need to add a little fuel. That's it. So maybe to see if you can actually hear it is, why don't you advance the timing 5 degrees or so and go drive it and see if you can get it to rattle. Are you running super or regular?
A regular.
Okay. With regular fuel, one molecule ignites 10 and 10 ignite 20. That's an exaggeration. With premium, this is the exaggeration. One ignites two, two ignites four, four ignites six. The burn in super is a little longer in milliseconds of time than the burn in unleaded. So if you want more power, and we're talking about thousands of an inch and thousands of this, then you can add a little bit more timing to it, and that will probably help you out. And if you know you've gone too far in timing when either you're rattling and pinging or it slow cranks on you, go rah, 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 then you got too much timing in it. But that's the way the old race car guys used to set them up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's all the information I can find is on full throttle race cars and not just light throttle driving around. That's why I was curious to call you.
Okay. Well, you know, I was so impressed. I must pay you a compliment that you came to 14-1, because that's the stoichiometric ratio that we strive for. And so anything up from that or down from that, you're hitting a home run. And I bet when you pull the plugs, they're going to be nice and tan. And if they're nice and tan, you've hit a home run, and you are using every drop of fuel that goes forward, and nothing's coming out of the tailpipe. And I can no longer say to you on an old car, if you want to die, just wrap your lips around the tailpipe, and you'll be dead in a short period of time. Because with a car that's running clean like yours, you might have to pack your lunch. I got to go, but thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. And so we have five. Gil answers the phone, 602-508-0960.
John, he's ready to get on the air.
Thank you for that. I'm looking at two different clocks, and I'm sorry about that. But, John, how can I help you today?
Yeah, Mark, I wanted your thoughts on something. I saw a commercial yesterday from AutoZone, and it's the first time I've ever seen it that advertised like this, because I know you started the show with diagnostic and diagnosis, and their thing was on this commercial was the free AutoZone Finder service, and they're actually saying the warning light that they, you know, that they look at with their equipment in less than a minute is backed by technician verified fixes. And I was thinking to myself, man, I had a lot of questions with that. I was wondering your thoughts.
Now, you know, this happens to me a lot, John. It's at the end of the first hour, and I get a question like this that I'm not mad at John in the least bit, but it wads my underwear up something fierce. The question is who's these certified technicians? That's the question. Who's the one that's saying this code and I ran three tests and here's the results of each one of the three tests, and at the end of that, then I came to the conclusion that I had a lean condition, then I hit the brake pedal and saw the lean condition get worse, then I recognized that the brake booster's bad. Okay? So who are these people?
Right.
Is it the do-it-yourselfers that are coming into the parts store? And are they saying, oh, this oxygen sensor fixed this code on my car, and so now they have all this together? You've hit a really hot spot with me, because I can't do it over the phone, and I can't do it on the radio, because I have to take tailpipe emissions. I want to look at O2 sensor readings. I want to look at MAP sensors. I want to look at mass airflow sensors. It takes a while for me to figure out why this thing's missing or running lean or running rich or doesn't start. It takes a while, and I have to have the car in front of me. So I need to just be careful what I say here. I think I just read something the other day that there's a place with transmissions that if you call them, and if you have all of these following pieces of equipment, they'll walk you through this repair for $75. Then I went and looked at the reviews, and they're all glowing from shops. Here's why. Because the shop has the equipment. So they're plugging in their scanners, and it's not a code reader, it's a scanner. So we're going to look at serial stream data. So the guy on the other line goes, well, listen, Mark, you have a 1-2-3-4-5-6 transmission, and what's the temperature, and da-da-da, and we go back and forth, and he's gathering data. Then he goes, I want you to do this, I want you to do that, I want you to manually put it in first and go take it up high on the RPMs, and I want you to do this, and together we're going to fix or diagnose your transmission. Well, until you have that ability, then it's suspect. Let me tell you what happened just recently on a separate subject, John.
To me, Mark, it brought up more questions than answers.
Well, what it's going to do is it's going to be guessing. They're just guessing. And
yeah.
And who benefits from guessing?
Right.
The parts store.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you what I saw the other day on Facebook. And again, my panties are wrapped up around my shoulder blades right now. Some guy said that he took his car into a repair shop and they charged him $400 or $500 to fix a bunch of modules, and that's because the guy at the auto parts counter said to him, "Oh, you just jump started somebody's car. You can't jump start newer model cars. They can't do that. You cannot jump start newer model cars." Well, he has a couple of controllers that are burnt up in his car. That tells me unequivocally, guaranteed. That somebody crossed the cables. Now, it's either going to be the good Samaritan that stopped and helped him, or it's going to be the guy that had the dead battery. But the story doesn't go on. It just talks about now this auto parts store has perpetuated this thing that says you should not, as a good Samaritan or otherwise, let anybody jump start your car or you jump to start their car in any of the new later model cars. And I don't know what later model cars is, but that typically means about the last 10 years. Nothing could be further from the truth. It just wadded my underwear up something fierce for them to give that kind of bad stuff out there, because all that happened is somebody who hooked up the cables hooked them up backwards, positive to negative. And they smoked, and we this is what we talk about. We talk about that the electronic control module, you let the smoke out of it. That means we saw smoke coming out of the module because you crossed the cables. And so you just ruined that module. So it's this kind of stuff is perpetuated by the hairy-chested guys that don't have enough skills to work at a shop, but they hang around the front counter of the auto parts stores, and they share experiences with one another, and then sooner or later, what happens is it becomes God's law. So there's nothing to the rumor that you can't jumpstart a newer model car. You can't jumpstart one or have someone jumpstart your new late model car. There's nothing that's true about that. It has everything to do with the skill level of the person that's going to be hooking up the cables. And if it's a tow truck driver and he's got 10 years under his belt or 5 years under his belt, he is certainly capable of pulling that off. So the proper installation of jumper cables is what prevents the electronic controls to let the smoke out, so to speak. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One more time, 602-508-0960. Well, good afternoon, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next hour, we're going to be here talking about car repair problems, stuff like that, so you're welcome to join us. And I'm going to tell you real quick about another shop that's on my best car repair shops list. It's Blackwell Automotive. It's 40th Street and Greenway. He's been a friend of mine for years, and Tom is one of the shops, and all the shops on my list. They are very capable of honestly and somewhat quickly diagnosing check engine light problems. Just because the check engine light says that we have a misfire in number 6 cylinder doesn't mean that you replace the spark plugs and all the wires and this and that. You go in and figure out what the misfire is. And then you find out it's a vacuum leak over here that's causing the misfire, which has nothing to do with spark plugs, which is what all the parts houses seem to hang their hat on. So nevertheless, Blackwell Automotive, he knows right from wrong, and he can diagnose your car. Ken, thank you for holding through the break. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark. Well, unfortunately, I have a broken heart, so I guess you can't help me. Can you, Mark?
I can't help anybody with that.
It's all right. There is something else. Yeah. Okay, 2016 Ford Explorer. I cannot pass emissions inspection.
Okay.
The oxygen and heated oxygen sensor are not going green on the test. We thought it might be the PCM, but we've done a lot of checking, and I don't think it's the PCM. So finally, because I've gone 39 days into my renewals, so I'm out of temporary registration time, we replaced, I may be using exactly the right word, the inbound and the outbound oxygen sensors, a total of four. It's still not turning green. Nobody can tell me how to fix it. All the state is telling me is that you need to get it fixed. So I'm just hoping maybe you've seen this before.
No, there's nobody that can tell you how to fix it. How much did you spend on those four oxygen sensors?
The first estimate was about $850. I got them replaced for around $500, which I think is a pretty good price.
Oh, so you spent $500 on a guess that didn't fix your problem. Right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, you are correct.
Okay. Ken,
so I'm kind of frustrated because nobody can tell me how to fix this thing.
And I'm not going to tell you that I can tell you either, because here's what you're saying. You're saying that I have high blood pressure, but I want a doctor to tell me over the phone what's wrong with me. And how can that be a reasonable question? I mean, how can that be reasonable?
Yes.
The real issue is I'll explain it, and then you do it yourself, okay? Okay, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to hook up a very sophisticated computer to the car, and I'm going to look at a bunch of parameters. And I'm going to look at fuel parameters and timing parameters and spark duration. I'm going to look at all of this. But the most important thing is I'm going to look at the pre and the post, the oxygen sensor in front of the catalytic converter and the oxygen sensor in the back of the catalytic converters. So I want to look at those. And now at idle, should the front one be more than the back one, or the back one be more than the front one, or how does that work? And then we got four of them. So at idle or normal throttle or wide open throttle or 30 miles an hour or 60 miles an hour or 80 miles an hour, oh, all of those have different readings. So how am I going to figure that out at home?
Yes.
So you can't fix it. Mm-hmm. You already tried. And you spent a whole bunch of money for nothing. And I can tell you unequivocally that there's 20 shops in town that could have fixed it for less than $500. So, and you know what the funny part about this is? It's going to be something as simple and as funny as a fuel filter that's plugged up. The fuel filter could be plugged up.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. So who do you know, I'm in Anthem, that could do this for me?
Well, are you prepared to pay between $100 and $200 for a diagnostic fee?
Yeah, I've already paid for two, so why not get a third one?
Ooh. Well, why don't you go back to one of the two guys that did the diagnostic fee? Didn't they tell you what the proper repair was? And if they told you O2 sensors and you did O2 sensors, doesn't that mean that their diagnosis was defective?
Yes.
Okay. You need to start there.
Yes, sir.
You need to go back to the guys that told you that this was an O2 sensor problem. You need to show them that you put four in. You need to show them this, and you say, I need you to consider either refunding my money, which clearly didn't do me any good because your diagnosis was the O2 sensors pre and post, or you say, do you want to take another shot at it? I still think that you need to refund my money. And Ken, you have to be careful because, Ken, just between you and me, nobody wants this kind of customer. Because what happens is you fix it, then the customer goes to the other shops, and pretty soon there's this giant war going on the internet between shop number one, shop number two, shop number three, the state of Arizona, and the car owner. And everybody's fighting about whose fault it is on the internet. And so I know at least two or three shops that will just bid this through the nose. If they hear the whole story, then they're going to say, this is what they tell me. They say, well, we're going to start at $375, and we're going to go from there. That's what I'm going to charge you to diagnose this. And if I can fix it, I'll fix it, but there'll be extra parts and stuff like that. So if you get that really big number that's twice or three times the normal rate, I think the message from the shop is, nah, we don't want to get involved in this. But if you live up in Anthem, then I'd probably go to Kurtz at Bell Road and I-17. I would probably say this. My name is Ken, and I have a 16 Explorer, and I've got a check engine light that I can't get through emissions, and I've already had a lot of other people tell me what's wrong with it, and I've already replaced all the pre- and post-CAT O2 sensors on it. But I want you to tell me exactly what's wrong, And if you can give me a graph or a, or not a graph, give me a not to exceed this, and it'll definitely cost you this, but I won't go past this on the diagnostic charges. Most of us are in the $100 on the short side, maybe 75 on the short side, all the way up to 300 on the top end. And a lot of the times, the shop will tell you, sometimes it's 300 to find it and $10 to fix it. And that's included. But a plug fuel filter can make it run lean. The computer will see lean, 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 lean. The computer will say, wait a minute, I saw him hit the foot on the throttle. I should see rich. I don't see it. So everything is stuck at lean, so it sets all the codes. You went and replaced all the messengers, and in reality, that had nothing to do with the problem. I hope and pray for your sake it's not a plug fuel filter. I really do. Anyway, Kurt's Automotive. Talk to a Kurt or Eric, either one of those two guys, and admit that you're behind the you're between a rock and a hard spot, and it's your fault. And I think you'll gain favor. Okay.
Did you say the name of the shop was Kurt?
Kurt's, CURTS, northeast corner of Bell and I-17.
Bell and 17. Okay, great. Thank you, sir.
All right, good luck to you. Tony, how can I help you?
Hey there, Mark. I think somebody needs to feed their dog right now.
You know what? I have two dogs, and I'm going to do that just at the next break.
Hey, when you were talking to another caller earlier in the last segment, you were talking about nice and tan on the spark plugs. That's absolutely true. Years ago, I was able to talk with Johnny Loper there, and he called it coffee and cream, which is pretty much the same thing.
Yes.
You know, in his dragster. I have a question about a 1997 Ford Explorer.
Okay.
That's, you know, coming up on its years, needing front-end work from wheel to wheel.
Okay.
I'm asking, once all the good stuff's put on there, you know, once it's replaced, is there any way I can crank up the torsion bar just a little bit, you know, to give it just a little bit more stiff suspension in the front?
No, you do that before the alignment.
So set that first, and then let the guys put everything in.
Well,
and then realign it.
This is nothing I want, and here's why, just between you and me. You're telling me to replace everything in the front end, but I'm scared to death that you're thinking that I'm going to fix a problem that you have, and your shotgun repair is going to take care of the problem. And I'm scared to death that after I replace everything from front wheel to front wheel, the noise is still there, the vibration is still there, the problem is still there, and now all of a sudden you're mad at me because I did what the repairs you said, but I didn't do any diagnosis, but you got the same problem. So I want to be a part of fixing the problem. But to answer your question bluntly, there are, yes, you can, I would put springs back in it if I were you. I mean, if it's a...
It's a torsion bar in the front.
Okay, all right. Well, don't you have, you don't have any springs?
No, all it has is a shock. There's no spring.
Okay. Well,
it's just torsion bars on each side, just like a Nissan pickup.
Okay. Well, there's going to be a ride height specification for the vehicle. And so if you're below that, then yes, you can bring the torsion bars up to that. Most of us won't exceed that number. So if it's already at ride height and you want another inch higher, we don't do that because we know that when we do that and we raise the body off, then we're going to take the top of the tires, kick them out, which means that we're going to wear the outside edge of the tires on both front, and that we can't adjust that because by raising up the body, you've changed the spindle horizon. And so there's a delicate difference between the horizon of the spindle and the horizon of the body.
Right. Well, I'm looking for the perfect mill is why I'm asking.
Well, there's a specification for the mill. I mean, it's not really a visual or it's. I think it needs to go up or go down. There's a specification for that. So when we get
right, I think a torsion bar probably does wear out somewhat, you know, and needs to be maybe twisted just a little bit to give it back to where it started from when it rolled off the factory floor.
Well, this isn't that hard. You go to the shop and you say, I want you to align my front end, but I want you, would you normally check ride height right off the bat? And here I'm on the other side of the counter. Okay, hey, Tony, yeah, I can do the alignment, but let me ask you a question. What symptom have you got that leads you to believe that you want to check the ride height and you want an alignment? Is it pulling left? Is it pulling right? Is it abnormal tire wear? What specifically is it that you're looking to fix?
It's got 170,000 miles on it. The whole front's wore out. I want to put all new, rubber, grommets, everything, tie rod ends, ball joints, and I want to stiffen it up just a touch.
Okay, and then how is you going to stiffen it up? Are you talking about by replacing all the moving components in the steering or in the suspension?
The steering is just fine. It doesn't leak a drop or, you know. It's, you know,
you just said tie rod ends. That's steering?
Well, you got inner and outer.
Okay.
As far as it's an all-independent four-wheel drive.
I know what your car is, Tony, but I'm asking you questions like we're at the front counter. So I'm asking you to give me symptoms of what you want to tighten up the front end. That's a kind of subjective thing. I'm kind of scared about that right now. So I'm scared that maybe there is symptoms, but you're not telling me, but you just want to tighten up the front end. Well, there's no measurement for tightening up the front end. Here's what I'd do. I'd walk out with Tony and I'd say, Tony, sit in the car. And then I would put my hand on the driver's front tire. And then I would say, Tony, put your hand at 12 o'clock and go left an inch, and then go back to center, and then go right an inch and back to center. And I want you to do that for me 10 times. I'm going to put my hand on the left front tire, and I'm going to look at your hand, and then I'm going to go to the other side of the tire, and I'm going to say to you, your steering wheel is firmly attached to the two front tires, Tony. What do you hope to accomplish better than that?
And let them to give me a diagnosis first, how much it's going to cost to fix the entire front end, because it's worn out. And all I
What's
want
the
to do
symptoms?
Is stiffen up the trans... you got tire wear, the ball joints, the lower ball joints are worn out. When you sit there in front of the car and you look at it, the wheels are squatted out at the bottom. You got 170,000 mile on all these original components.
Wait a minute, you said you had outside air edge wear?
No, inside.
Oh, inside
edge wear.
Because
of the ball joints. Yeah, the ball joints are worn out. Lower ball joints are worn out, so it's inside tire ball wear. Inside tire.
Okay.
But, I mean, I'll just let him, I want him just to ask me how much it's going to cost to fix it and put it back and then stiffen up the front end, including shocks. You know, I want to get some good shocks, just one grade above what it came with.
Okay. Well, I can tell you that this kind of conversation I hope my guys pass on the front counter, because there's expectations that are not measurable. Tighten up the front end. That's not measurable. We have sophisticated equipment that can tell us the steering wheel is attached to the two front tires, but Tony still says that he wants a different feel. And the different feel, he can't qualify. Does he want it tighter? Do you want me to put a couple of turns on the rack and pinion or the steering box? What do you want me to do? And then all of a sudden we start varying from normal, and then all of a sudden everybody's in trouble. So I just this kind of conversation scares most of us, because there's an expectation that's not measurable in the world we live in, that are specifications and parameters. The inside wear, that's it. I can fix the inside wear. Whatever it takes, I can fix the inside wear. A shop can fix the inside wear. But stiffening up the suspension and bringing the car back to new, that's the things I struggle with. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday, we're here talking about cars right here on KKNT, 960 the AM dial. And the name of the show is Under the Hood with Mark Salem. Folks, I like the interaction between the callers and stuff, but I hope you benefit from the perspective of the shop owner and what kind of symptoms we want to hear about and what expectations we deal with and all that kind of stuff. And I especially talk to the ladies and the women and the wives out there, because sometimes the husband then charges up the his wife or his spouse with this information, and when the wife gets to the front counter, she's just regurgitating that. Try to work on symptoms. I have a problem, and this is what it's doing. I want you to diagnose it and then call me with an estimate. That's kind of what we want. When we talk about expectations of I want it to ride like new, that's very difficult. And most of us understand that in our business, that's just the recipe for a disaster and a Better Business Bureau complaint. Mario, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I got a question on air. Car air conditioning is a 2006 Suzuki Firenza, and I've already replaced some parts on it, but I'm not getting cooling air out of my vent.
Okay. Do you have the ability to suck out the refrigerant, measure it, and put it back in, or did you just empty it out, and how did you measure the refrigerant back in?
Well, I did that. I replenished the refrigerant with a scale, but I could not get all the refrigerant in it that was calling for.
Okay. Okay. And so does it blow colder at highway speeds, or does it blow colder around the city? Are you using normal? Are you using maximum? Where's your blower speed at?
Put my blower speed when I first started charging on max. I got in everything except 11 ounces of fluid or Freon, and I took it for a drive, you know, just city driving. Didn't do anything. It still blew hot air.
Okay, where'd you get the 11 ounces from?
The scale. I couldn't get any more than 11. Okay. It's supposed to have like 1.4 ounces, if I remember right. I could only, on the scale, when I was charging it, it wouldn't go beyond, it wouldn't go below 11 ounces.
Okay.
Completely fill it.
Okay, well, obviously something's wrong because we don't have that problem. We can overfill either the low side or mm-hmm. the high side. We can blow the can out of our hands if we okay. want to. So you're doing something wrong. May I suggest to you that you do something else, and here's what our industry has to offer. We have equipment that will suck your refrigerant out, clean it, remove the water, remove the moisture, remove the trash, and prepare it to go back in. We're going to look up by your VIN number and find out that you hold 18 ounces. I'm just guessing. Mm-hmm. So then we're going to take your 11, clean it up, put it back in. Then we're going to put 7 on top of the 11. We're going to button it all back up. We're going to check the center vent temperature. We should have something somewhere between the 40s, low 50s. And after we go drive it and the fan speed is not on high but on number 3 and we get good center vent temperature, then we're done.
Okay.
But I can't explain why you can't get refrigerant in it when half the time the guys will blow the can up in their hands because they're mm-hmm. putting too much refrigerant in it. So I don't know what's going on. But that's
can I throw a comment at you? I'm beginning to think that maybe I'm not getting the vent lever, whatever you want to call it, door to open up, or the air is going through the evaporator.
No. No, the blend door redirects mm-hmm. air from top, middle, or bottom.
Okay.
And then we have another door that gives you outside air and inside air. But there's no such thing as Freon to the evaporator having anything to do with the vents at all. Nothing.
Okay.
So
all right.
Yeah, it's not the fact that the controls in the dashboard are set wrong. No, that's not the case. We don't care what the controls are. Most of us turn it on max, turn it on high blower, and we do all of our testing from there. So you're going to spend, depending on how much Freon, well, first of all, if you've used any kind of contamination in your system, our equipment will pick that up immediately, and we won't do anything to your car because your stop leak or whatever will contaminate our machine.
Yeah, I haven't put anything with stuff.
Okay, and make sure you tell them that. Just tell them. But I think on the turnaround, you're going to probably be no less than 100 and probably no more than 200 to have somebody put the right amount of refrigerant, including yours, back in and then top it off. And then they'll be able to also diagnose it. Once the pressures are right, then the diagnosis of what's going on and do we have the orifice tube in right? Is it backwards? Is it in? Is it the right color? All that kind of stuff. That can all be there afterwards. Okay?
Okay. Question on that. I changed the expansion valve on it with a generic one. Could that be a possible problem?
No. If it was an application by the manufacturer of the part,
yes.
then typically
mm-hmm.
it's the appropriate part by application, then you should be fine. You should be fine.
Okay. All right.
Okay, good luck to you, Tony. Mario. Good luck to you, Mario. All righty, 602-508-0960. We're going to come up on a break here. Let me talk about a couple of other car repair shops. I already talked about Kurtz over at I-17 and Bell. Most of the shops are really good diagnosticians. We're not afraid of air conditioning issues, transmission issues. It won't start cold. It won't start hot. It idles poorly when it's hot. It idles great when it's cold. It's got a misfire. It has this code. It has that code. This is what's going on. This is what they told me over at the other auto repair shop. Those are easy questions for us to deal with. And Kurtz is really good at that. Now, just up the road from him is Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley. Action Auto's been around a long time, and I've known Tom since 1983 when he opened up Action Auto. I trust him. I trust him and his staff to work on cars and do a good job working on cars. They have ASE Master Certified Technicians, and Tom has instilled upon them, let's get the symptoms, let's get the diagnosis, let's get the repair, let's effect the repair and make sure that the symptoms are gone. So it's a big circle. All of us fall into that category. So no matter whether you're at I-17 in Bell at Kurtz Auto or if you're I-17 in Deer Valley for Action Auto, you've got two of the very best shops in that area right around the corner from you. So that's what I would do. And you can go to marksalem.com and click on Best Car Repair Shops, and you can see the shops all over town that I recommend as really being good shops. And you should know, too, that you can go there and spend as much money or as little as you want, and Mark Salem doesn't make a dime. So there's no commission, and there's no me sending you there so I can make money. That's not how it works. These are shops that applied, and these are shops that I vetted. So there's nobody there that I don't have their home phone number or I don't have their cell phone number. They're good guys. I know they're good guys because I've been around in the metropolitan Phoenix area since 1979 working on cars. So I've been there and done that, and I've seen some guys come and go through the grace of God, and then I've seen some guys come and stay through the grace of God. And that's exactly what the situation is. Most everybody that's really good at what they do in the car repair business has gray hair. It's either curling over the top of their ears or it's on their neck or something like that. Most of us have been around, and we actually got a start in the old cars, which is the 60s and the 70s and the 80 cars, and we've transitioned all the way to the new computer car. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and you're welcome to join us. Again, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here at 10 o'clock. Talking about cars, and you're always welcome to join us. I'll be back in about 6 minutes. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here talking about car and car repair issues and questions and comments and symptoms and diagnoses and stuff like that. And you're welcome to join us. The lines are wide open. We have five lines available, and Gil will be answering the phone. So what he does is he just asks for your name, and then he whispers your name in my ear, and then as soon as I get to a place where I can take a breath, I'll say, let's go to so-and-so, and that's kind of how it works. So, and they are live, and we're on a slight delay, but that's in case Mark uses a bad word, not you. And it's if you can formulate the, you know, this is the year, make, and model we're talking about, and here's the question that I have, or here's the concern I have, or something like that, that makes it easy. It also makes it very, we open our arms to females, women, ladies, wives, stuff like that that have problems or they have something wrong with their car and they just want to ask, you know, have a discussion about it. You see, that's what's so important is it's what we call the front counter discussion. It's very difficult on the wives to bring the husband's car in and to tell us that he wants all the brakes to be replaced. She doesn't know why. He just wants all the brakes to be replaced. And he's come to the conclusion that when he applies the brakes hard, that the car shudders. And so he says that the brakes have to be bad. Well, after we do on the low side, $300, on the high side, $600 worth of brake work, he still has the shudder. But then now we didn't do a good job because we didn't fix the problem. When in reality it wasn't the brakes, it has ball joints or tie rod ends that are a problem. Steering components are allowing the steering wheel to shake left and right and shudder. And it happens only during braking. It's because of the front end of the car has dropped down and we're shuddering the front tires. But it's happening when it's braking, but it's not caused by the braking. It makes the play in the suspension available to you, and you can see it, but brakes aren't the repair. So That's the hard part, and that's where I feel especially sorry for a lot of ladies when they come in, and I know that they're just regurgitating what their husband said. And then a lot of times, ladies, the default is here's his cell phone number. If you have any further questions, call him. That's the default. That's really the way that it works the best. Who might be on the phone?
Say hello to Bill.
Bill, good morning. How can I help you?
Good. Mark, I have a question. I bought a used 17 Edge 18 months ago. The remote start didn't work. Took it to the Ford dealer, and they couldn't flash it, I guess, so they had to diagnose it. And in their diagnosis, what they said was that somebody had put in a aftermarket VSS module, and nobody can explain to me why somebody with a car under warranty would put in a VSS module that's aftermarket. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, did you Google and see if you could even find a vehicle speed sensor module if in the aftermarket?
It does show up on Google.
Okay. So it is available?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the vehicle speed sensor and the remote controls of the car is a disconnect I'm having a tough time with, but let me ask you this. When I look it up on the internet, what does it say? What's the purpose of me taking out the Ford Motorcraft vehicle speed sensor module and putting in this other vehicle speed sensor module? What's the benefit?
Okay. So, I honestly don't know. I'm actually listening to the radio in the car right now, so I
okay.
That's just what that was the diagnosis from the Ford dealer was what had happened, and so they had to do something else to get the remote start to work.
2 minutes.
But nobody could explain why somebody would put that in on a car under warranty.
Okay,
it doesn't make any sense to me either.
No, it doesn't. But let me defend the dealer in this particular case, because you have the customer talks to the service writer, and the service writer writes down, and then it goes to the technician, and the technician's supposed to look at the car, and rarely does he have the opportunity or take the opportunity to call the customer and get more information. Then if he needs a little help, he might go to the senior guy in the area, and this happens at my shop as well. And then the two of them come up to a plan, and then they go from there. Are you sure that they didn't say that they had to reflash the module? And here's why I say that. Every time we have put a new module in the car, we have to tell the module what car we put it in. And the module has a library of cars that it fits. So we have to go in with this sophisticated computer software, and we have to reflash the module to say, hey, module, you belong in the 1917 Edge. How much did they charge you for this, by the way?
Well, it was $189 for a fee to look at it. Okay.
Okay.
They tried. I thought, you know, flashing it would what I was told would take care of it, and that's what did not. And then, in their diagnosis is what they came up with, this aftermarket VSS module.
Okay.
And well, now I'm having to. That was under warranty. Now I'm having to deal with it because it went off again, and they charged me $189 just to take a half-hour look at it and tell me I've got to bring it back, and they've got to do a diagnosis and the whole thing over again.
Well, doesn't this smell like, let's forget it's the dealer, because it could be an independent, could be a chain store. Doesn't it smell like this went wrong at the very beginning? First of all, why are we going to put an aftermarket VSS module? The only thing we'd put it in there for is to change the speed. And I'm having a tough time understanding the relationship between the remote and the speed. Unless, of course, the speed sensor is saying I'm doing 20 miles an hour when the car's in park and the engine is off and I'm trying to stand outside pushing the doggone button to get it to lock. And it goes, the speed sensor says, well, we're doing 20 miles an hour. Yeah. You see, when you look at all of this, and then you need politely but firm say to them, no, we're not going to spend more money on this. You've already diagnosed it. And you've reflashed it, and you've done this, and you've done that, and I paid for repair, and you didn't fix it. We have the same problem. So from here on, I'm not spending any money. You guys need to fix it. And then what happens is I'll just sign the paperwork, and if everything's okay in a period of 2 weeks or 3 weeks, then I'll come back and pay you. I mean, you have to put your foot down, because you're in a circle, and you know it, and so do I. And it doesn't it doesn't make any difference if it's an independent shop, a chain store, if it's a guy that runs a mobile car clinic, or if it's a dealership. You're in a vicious circle. And they have to explain, first of all, why does the vehicle speed sensor module have anything to do with the remote? I can tell you this. Have you got a piece of paper?
Yes, you do.
Okay. 480-598-1234. 480-598-1234. Ask for Alan and tell him you have the edge with the VSS and remote problem. I'm going to call my son in just a minute. I'm going to tell him about our conversation. We have a mobile guy that fixes this kind of stuff for us that is absolutely outstanding. You could have the choice of paying his fee and having him fix your car, and I'll back up the fact that he's going to fix your car. I'll give you my money back if he doesn't fix your car. So after we have it 2 or 3 weeks or a month on the road and everything's fine, you can go in and say, here's your first try, here's your second try, and here's a repair order with the third try, and I got 30 days and everything's fine. I think you need to refund me your first try and your second try. And then they say, well, why didn't you come back to me? And you say, well, I came to you the first time, then I came back to you the second time, and I wasn't going to give you a chance the third time when you gave me different stories. Does that sound like a plan?
Okay.
That's what I'd do if I were you. Okay?
Okay, mate. Was 480-590-1234?
Yeah, yeah. 480-598-1234. Okay?
Okay, I was writing. Okay, very good.
Okay, good luck to you. Thank you. And we'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 46 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We have 14 minutes left in the show. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You're welcome to give us a call, and we'll start with your make and model and what kind of symptoms do you have, what kind of problems you have, stuff like that, and we'll go that way the best way we can. Sun City is a big area. Sun City has lots of car repair shops, but the one that I refer people to is Auto Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. They're family-owned and operated since 1982, and I've known Chuck since 1979. So I've been around Chuck, and his son Derek actually runs the Auto Dynamics shop at Grand and west of 99th Avenue. So I can do that with all the peace in the world, knowing full well that they know right from wrong, and every shop, including my own, at some time or another, just says, we need a fresh pair of eyes on your car. I can't fix your car. I can't see the forest for the trees, or I don't have the necessary diagnostic information, or I don't have the necessary scanner. But here's a shop that I have sent two people to before, and they've successfully taken care of this. That's what you hope. And I can tell you that virtually every shop I know that I respect has that ability to pass on to the customers. If we exhaust all of our abilities, then we're going to send you to somebody else, and hopefully they can fix it. And as far as working out the money, you can do that before that. You can do that before you go to the next shop with the shop that you're going with. So those are the kinds of things that happen, and they happen to mine. My guys sometimes don't fix the right problem. Sometimes my guys have a mindset that this is going to be it, it always is it, and they fix that, but it's not. So we have to unwind the whole deal and start it at zero. So that's the tough part of the industry, but it doesn't happen very often, but it happens to all of us at least once or twice or three or four times a year, at least, where we simply don't fix the car. And it's how you unwind it and start over is really the make of a good shop. So anyway, Auto Dynamics in Sun City, it's the only one I can recommend. And I wish I could tell you about more, but that's it. 602-508-0960 is the phone number if you have a car question or a car problem that we can handle in the next 12 minutes or so. 12, actually a little bit more than that, about 15 minutes or so, then we'll do that. 602-508-0960. Car repair, the customers, I would suggest that when you go in that you write down something to tell the shop. Have it in writing. It's more likely that that piece of paper is going to end up at the technician's desk that's going to work on your car. And you could write that piece of paper to the technician. To whoever gets assigned to work on my POS, Ford Edge, whatever. And here's my phone number, and you can call me anytime you want, and I'm happy to answer questions. That puts the technician and the customer on the same wavelength. and you can say, this is how you make it happen. You start it up on a cold morning, you put it into reverse, you back out of the driveway, and then you drive down the road and get up to a speed of about 45 or 50, because shortly after I leave my house, I'm on a frontage road and I'm accelerating to get on the freeway. So that's kind of, and during that period of time, it smells like rotten eggs, and it's bucking and surging and running really rough, but that's the only time it does it is first thing in the morning. And the check engine light is coming on a regular basis, but it also goes off on a regular basis. All of that information is so valuable. It's so valuable to us that, are responsible for fixing your car. That is just a wonderful thing to have, is when you have that kind of a conversation. And ideally, it's going to be with the person that drives the car. And if it's the wife and we have to deal with the husband, then we're actually talking to the wife through the husband. And sometimes that's not real beneficial. But then again, you just get, you know, you deal with the cards that were dealt to you. And that's all you can do as a shop owner. We're far away from being Lily White in my industry. There's a lot of shops that I know that provide a 50-point inspection on every visit. And it's no secret, I call that a shopping spree. It's an opportunity for us to look at your car and write it up for a whole bunch of stuff that has no risk and a huge reward. So, you know, greasing your front end or aligning the front end, there's no risk there. We're not going to make it worse, or we shouldn't make it worse. And if it's the same as when you get it back, it's okay. So there are things like that that's important for us to have that conversation with you. But the idea is let's understand that there's a circle. And we start with, what are the symptoms? And then a discussion about when the symptoms occur. Fast, slow, left, right, cold morning, hot morning, air conditioning on, air conditioning off, north of 45 miles an hour, south of 45 miles an hour, that kind of stuff. You can't imagine how most shops embrace the abundance of information like that. That really helps us out. It really narrows it down. And if we can drive it the way you tell us to and duplicate the problem, that just is the very best. But there's just some shops out there, like I said about the 20-point inspection, the 50-point inspection, it's just a shopping spree. Bring your car in, and we're going to find a whole bunch of stuff that you need to get done, and we're going to tell you what it is and why you need it and all this other kind of stuff. But the real question, the self-defense mechanism for the car owner is, Mr. Salem, I understand that I need to have the front end rebuilt, and I understand that it's $850, and that includes an alignment. But would you tell me what symptoms do I have today that I will recognize that you're going to fix? Mull that question over. What symptoms do I have today that are created by my front end needing $800 worth of work that I have today? Describe those symptoms. You have no idea how powerful that is, because they better be on their game. Have you noticed that it pulls left most all the time? Yes, I have. Okay, have you also noticed that there's abnormal wear? The outside of the left front tire is wearing, and the inside of the right front tire is wearing. Yes. Okay, well, that has to do with the repair and the alignment. I can't fix the tire wear, but I can prevent it from happening to the next two tires. And I'd like your permission to take the backs off and put them on the front, and then take those tires that have some abnormal wear and put them on the back, or you buy new tires. But I'm going to fix that, and I'm going to guarantee that the front tires won't wear like those other two tires are. That's the kind of conversation you should have. It's difficult to talk to the technician because we have service riders between the customer and the technician. But that's why if you take your note and you give a copy of it to the service writer, but you take the original and you tape it to the rear view mirror and you say, Mr. Technician, or would you please call me with any questions, Mark, and here's my cell phone number. That's wonderful stuff. And that's the technicians love that, because all they want is symptoms, and they want to know, does it always pull to the right, or does it just pull to the right first thing in the morning? And you have a low tire light on. Have you dressed that? Well, the low tire could very well... Well, the low tire says it's the left rear. I know, but I think it's the right front. And I think someone rotated the tires without telling the computer where the tire came from. So the computer thinks that the right front tire is the one that's low on air, but really it's the left rear tire because someone rotated the tires. So I'm going to air up all the tires and clear the code, and you drive it for a week or so and see if the problem comes back. And I'm going to tell the computer that the A tire is on the right rear and the B tire is on the left rear, because A, B, C, D is how most computers keep track of the tires, or left front, left rear, right rear, or something like that. So those are the kinds of things that happen, but the self-defense mechanism, it really relates to you. The more information you can give us, the better off it's going to be. And be prepared to answer questions, and the answers can be yes, no, or I don't know, or I'm not the driver. So those are the kinds of things that help you come through with successful repair. A little bit about me. I'm a master tech. I've been involved in the car repair industry since 1979. I own my own shop. The show isn't about my shop. That's why I don't thump my chest and tell everybody where I work. Right now, I'm somewhat retired, and my kids are running it, but both of them have 20 years in the shop. And we have the same technicians, and we make mistakes. Not too long ago, one of my senior guys who worked for me for more than 30 years, and it was the fault of the shop. Here's what happened. He was working on an oil change on a brand new Honda Ridgeline. And in the middle of this oil change, he was called away from the car. And we really try not to do that. He was called away from the car, and when he got back, he thought he had put oil in the engine. But we had taken him out of his flow, and he closed the hood. The customer got in it. 17 miles later, the engine blew up, and it gets towed back in, and Mark gets to buy a new engine. The technician still has his job, so does the service writer, so does everybody, but we learned from this. So we've insisted that our technicians think about this. We want you to finish the job in front of you before we call you to the front counter. Or if it's a phone, just tell the service writer to take a message. So the technicians are responsible for making sure they finish the job. This kid's worked for me for more than 30 years. This is by far the biggest mistakes he's ever made. He still is employed with me. He was profusely sorry. But we looked at all the security cameras and all the tapes and everything, and we could clearly see that he got called away from the car. He really should have said, I'll be there in 10 minutes, and filled the car up with oil. That's what he should have done, but he didn't. Nevertheless, it's just the way it happens. So all of us have those kinds of problems. All of us cannot please everybody that comes in our doors. If you were to look at my shop, you'd see that there's some guy mad at me about an air filter. And there was another guy mad at me about a tire rotation. Those are okay. We're not going to be able to please everybody. And every shop in town is going to have some negatives and some positives. And we're no better, no worse than the best that are out there. So if you want to find a good shop in your geographical area where you live or where you work, then go to marksalem.com and click on Best Car Repair Shops. And you'll find a general repair, a transmission, a paint and body, and stuff like that. So these guys are friends of mine, and they're honest, and they're dependable. No reason to think that they're not going to treat you fairly. There's quite a few of them that are really good at tracking down vibrations and hesitations and hard cold start. Otherwise, it cranks over cold for an extended period of time before it catches. They're really good at that diagnostic stuff. Then some of the guys are really, really good on imports. Some of the guys are really, really good on diesels. Some of the guys are really, really good across the board, but don't do any heavy line stuff like motor replacements. So there's shops around there that are really good, and they're in their specialty. And so that's kind of important. MarkSalem.com. Mark with a K. Salem like the cigarette. MarkSalem.com. And you're welcome to send me an email if you want, if you have a question, and if you'll include your phone number. I usually like to call you back and have a little longer conversation with you because I'll have a lot of questions. So again, MarkSalem.com. Thank you. Wear your seatbelt. Don't drink and drive. And I'll see you next Saturday here on 960 KKNT.